Welcome to Enduring Grief, Healing Practices and True Stories of Living After Loss, where we dive into real, honest conversations about the journey through grief and the support that makes it possible. I'm Sarah Peterson, an LCSW, and in this space, I bring my experience as someone who has walked this path, as well as my work with my nonprofit, Clear Morning. I'm often joined by two incredible guests, Dr. Marla Speyer and Dr. Dean Sharp, both incredible people and physicians who've spent their lives caring for people and have supported me personally on my journey through grief. In our first episode, I'll share my personal story and how I've come to this work, why it matters so deeply to me, and how it might resonate with you. Whether you're navigating your own loss or standing by someone who is, this space is for you. Join me as we uncover the stories, the struggles, and the hope that lead to healing. Let's walk through this journey together. Welcome back to our podcast, Enduring Grief, Healing Practices and True Stories of Living After Loss. We are very excited to be in your ears again, and I'm here with two of my favorites, Dean and Marlis, who you now hopefully know. And if you don't, go back and listen to season one to get to know us all a little bit better. Welcome, guys.
Oh, I'm so happy to be here.
Yes, thank you.
Good, good. Well, we wanted to talk about all the other types of grief today, because one thing that comes up a lot, I think, for humans in general is a sense of loss or, hey, this isn't what I had planned for my life or my career or my family. And now I'm living in the trenches of what that means for me. And grief isn't just about death. It's about the lives we expected to live and the dreams that we had to let go of, the relationships that unraveled, and the identities we had to shed. So yeah, today we're going to dive into all the other, we aren't going to leave one behind. Just kidding. That's not possible. We're going to go into the quiet ones, the hidden ones, and the ones we rarely talk about, but feel just as deeply. And I think one of the reasons why we wanted to do this episode is because this podcast really is for everyone. And I know I don't want anybody to feel like, oh, well, that's not for me because I haven't suffered some enormous loss or death of a loved one. Because the bottom line is, yeah, you will someday, probably. And also, we know that you're out there experiencing grief in all sorts of ways all the time. And our culture just doesn't do a great job of preparing us for that. And at our nonprofit, Clear Morning, our mission is to shift the culture of grief through support, innovation, and awareness. And here's one way we're going to do that today. How's that sound, guys?
Great.
Inspirational.
Oh, good. I love being inspirational. It's my favorite thing. And I was kind of worried today because I was like, do I feel inspired? I don't know. Do you feel inspired today?
Yeah.
Oh, good.
I do.
Okay. I might need a little bit of that inspiration.
Oh, I'm ready.
She's ready. How about you, Dean?
Oh, this is such a huge topic. We could talk about this for hours and hours, so I'm looking forward to it.
All right. So we're telling our listeners to buckle up, get comfortable, because this is going to be a 7-hour podcast episode. Just kidding. We'll keep it at the 45-minute mark. So when you guys hear all the other grief, what are the first ones that come to mind?
Well, for me, the really kind of big one that's related to what we've already talked about, which is where someone dies, is where we lose a relationship that's important to us in a way that's separate from dying. We lose relationships because we outgrow them. We lose relationships because they outgrow us, or because we get mad at each other, or because we move to opposite sides of the world and lose touch, or because our life trajectories separated in some sort of a way. And I think because we're a culture that doesn't honor grieving and kind of allows us to slide by these incidences, we have a tendency to miss a lot of them, except for the ones that might be really huge and dramatic. I mean, the fracture of a relationship through some unforgivable slight or comment or betrayal is complicated then by the forgiveness issues that go along with it. But I think there are times when a relationship sort of slides away over a period of time where we wake up or we think of that person and we say, oh, yeah, what about them? And we have this little glitch inside of sadness. We have a tendency to ignore that.
Yeah, I agree. Because if we pay attention to it, it might mean we have to do something about it.
No.
Dun, 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 dun.
No, there's nothing you need to do. I mean, the best answer to grief really, I mean, the answer to grief is grief.
Yeah,
which is simply the willingness to feel the sadness.
Well, that's doing something.
To feel the sadness.
Yeah, I mean, like if I let that in, then I have to do something.
Action.
Well, I have to do something about it, even if it means like letting my guard down. That's doing something about it,
well,
right?
Grief is ultimately vulnerability, because if you want to stay in denial and delusion, then you protect your heart. And you protect your heart all the time, and you don't let the emotions of life in. And our favorites are probably grief and fear, but I mean, grief is at the top. Our culture is don't worry, be happy. And yet, grief is the doorway to gratitude for what you've had.
Okay, guys, if that made you mad, just take a breath. Like, that's hard to hear sometimes.
Right.
That is really hard to hear, because if you're looking at your life and you're facing divorce, financial ruin, loss of a job, being told that this grief is the door to gratitude might be hard to hear, don't you think?
Yeah, no, it is. I mean, and that is the transformation of the suffering.
Yeah.
Because until you've felt the grief to the point where you've gone through all the anger and grief, I mean, depression, and get to acceptance, then probably you're able to notice the gratitude.
And if we think about it for a second, if we go back to the fact that underlying all of this is a sense of helplessness or sadness or being afraid, oftentimes what happens is we cover those over with sort of pseudo-powerful emotions, which convince us that really we're in control of all of this. We get angry, or we write that person off. We say, well, the reason I'm not in relationship anymore is because that jerk moved away, or that idiot has moved on, or all of the ways that we disempower what might have been a very sweet and important thing in our lives, and we protect ourselves from truly feeling the power of that loss by covering it over with some fake, pseudo-powerful emotion, which leads us to think we're really in control of all this.
Yeah, I can definitely understand that. I mean, I had a very important person in my life just sort of peace out for about 6 years, and it was such a different type of grief, because when they're dead, there's really not a whole lot of negotiation that can go on, or like, you know, you're kind of at a dead end when you question what's gone on and what's happened, because you know, on some realistic level, you're not going to get those answers. And when somebody cuts themselves off from you, it's like, oh, but they're here and I want the answers. And there's a certain amount of anger. Well, we know that I get angry, but like, it was very, I was seeking the power through my anger for sure. Like, oh, now what's going on here? You're a terrible person. So that's much easier than sitting in the mystery of it all, right?
Right.
Which was the grief. And I was scared to grieve it, because then it kind of also felt more real in some way.
And vulnerable.
Well, yeah, I hate that. So
just saying.
Just saying.
And I think too, like, yes, death happens to us as grievers, where we're experiencing a loss and that's happening to us. But in the instance of a conflict or a fractured relationship that we're grieving, I think there's a different sense of like victimness to it.
Oh,
I think there can be, but I don't want to deny the fact that oftentimes, even in those situations where someone has died, oftentimes there'll be a victim component to that, or a blaming component of the person who's died, as if it's their fault.
Yeah.
And yet, as human beings, we'll even disempower the grief of the death of someone by replacing it with those more powerful emotions of, well, I'm just going to be angry with that person for dying. I mean, who do they think they are to up and die on me?
Yeah, you're right. I can see that for sure. We can do it with all the things. Be the victim.
I would love to add a different variety of grief, and that is loss of a job or loss of an identity. I loved being an obstetrician gynecologist for 20 years. And in the way I described the loss, it felt like I got fired from my job because I had MS. And the lack of compassion and flexibility on the part of my partners. But that was probably the deepest grief I have felt in my life. I mean, I really felt like I lost who I was, what my life's meaning was. I felt betrayed by my body, my profession, my colleagues. And in the depth of that grief, I mean, I read Job, I listened to classical music, but I was pissed. I mean, I really thought God should have done this to somebody who didn't like being up at night. Or I thought that I was really angry at my partners. And I've only had contact with one of them since then.
And Marlis, my goodness, there's so many layers of loss.
Oh my God, it was
the relationships with all those people.
Yep, and I worked
the role identity as a physician.
Yep.
Physical health.
Well, I mean, it's the death of dreams, the death of plans, the death of identity, the death of
relationships.
And I hope that you can hear how that same experience is true when we do lose a job or a marriage or a role. I mean, even, you know, your kid going off to college. I have accompanied so many women in such depths of grief with the loss of active parenting and feeling like they don't know who they are anymore. I mean, huge grief. Just your kid goes to college.
Well, you know, my son, he's about to head to Europe for 2 weeks without me. And I'm very excited for him. And I'm so sad that he will survive well 2 weeks without his mama. There's a loss there for sure. It's a transition.
And we go through transitions all the time like that. I mean, it's not just your child going off to college. It's your child going off to kindergarten, your child going off to grade school, your child becoming a teenager, handing my daughter off at her marriage. In every one of those situations, a part of us dies to who we have been and how we have conformed our lives and the place where we have operated comfortably for some period of time. And then suddenly there's a change. Our child no longer needs us in the same way, will no longer relate to us in the same way. When my daughters married, they didn't need a man to do those kinds of man things like fix this or bring a tool over for that. You know, they now had a husband who took care of all that. And my relationship to them shifted in many profound ways, which I wasn't even able to articulate at the time that it occurred, but played out over a period of time. And it's a sadness and a requirement to die to who we were, to how we were, and how the relationship was, and then reinvent it in some kind of a new way. And it's important that we actively move into the new room and reinvent it.
Yeah, I often talk about grief like where, you know, an event occurs, a loss occurs, whatever level you want to see that at. And it's like everything's on the table. Who I am, what feels safe, where my dreams lie, all those things. And one by one, we have to take them off the table in a period of redefinition. This now means this to me. Getting up in the morning and having my first cup of coffee means something different if I am not also rushing to get kids to school, et cetera. Agree?
Yep.
Totally agree.
And, you know, one of the things I love about our podcast is that I think we are very good at saying, and now what, to people? You know, like, yeah, we can all talk about how these things occur in our lives. We can experience them as part of the human experience. And what do we want people to know? Like, now what? Something has transformed in your life. Something has changed. Everything's on the table. What do we want folks to know? Now what?
Well, the way I think about it is that when something like that occurs, like my daughter got married, what happens is that all the old ways in which we related to one another, kind of the guideposts that we organized our life around, get pulled out of the ground, and we're standing in territory that's unknown. And there's a sense of wobbliness and the sense of being lost. And for me, one of the most powerful things that I've found that's important to do is, first of all, feel the feelings that are there in a real way, to acknowledge the reality of the situation. The second thing is to get clear about what it is that I most want moving forward. So I've lost the relationship as it was, but I can be really clear that I want to continue a relationship in the situation that I'm sort of using as an example. And so what might that relationship look like now, and how might I work towards it? You know, it's the same thing. We lose a job, we move to a new city, all of the changes that occur in anyone's life. And the reality is most of us navigate those changes pretty well, but I think we do it kind of numbed, and we do it binge watching Netflix and maybe having a little bit more wine every night. And we try to be as unconscious as we might be, and then hope we'll stumble over the new reality by luck. And I think it's a time to get some clarity about what you really want and how that might manifest, and to set new intention, or at least reiterate an old intention, which might look a new way.
That's what I was going to say. It's like, if we can find the goal, that's step one. But then to question whether or not the goal is achievable is step two. Because if it's to return to the way things were and have it be the same, then that's not achievable. Right. How can we adjust?
Yep.
Thoughts, Marlis?
Oh, and I would recommend the universal practice of journaling, because as you journal, it's like you connect your right and left brain, the linear sequential and the imaginative and creative sides of your brain, and both are able to write down, you know, what's happened, the emotions, what's really your experience. And it is actually, to keep a grief journal is one of the most powerful things you can do, because you'll notice how grief changes as you write over a year, and or you have some ritual that you do every day. And then with time, that writing can become like the creativity of what's next. When I lost doing obstetrics and I really considered what was it that I wanted, I recognized that, being charm school dropout, I wanted to have the same intensity of relationship with people in transition that I had in an OBGYN. And so I started volunteering in hospice, and I shifted my focus from birth to death. And so I think, in truth, in a lot of that came through journaling and seeing counselor.
Oh, and this is where Marlis and I first crossed paths way back when, in 2005.
Yeah.
Never to return to the same, right?
No, right.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned the journal for a variety of reasons, but I love that idea of going back and being able to see how things have progressed or shifted for you over time. And that's one of the exercises I do with people a lot is, you know, even here today, you know, Marlis, what do you wish, looking back on those first few days, months post-practice, what do you wish you knew? What would you whisper in your own ear?
Boy, I was like you. I was just puking and rave. I was in an altered space. I don't know that anything would have mattered to me. I just had to weep and rage. And I mean, you know, I think you'd have to give me about 3 months in, you could have said something to me. And then I think it's all about love, because when I remembered, my highest values are love and learning. And if I used those as my focal points as I continued on. And what, you know, it really was several years of really dark, difficult grief time. I'm wiser, more loving, and I learned so much.
And I don't think that we could ever make those darker days less dark. And that's not my point in this exercise. But even if it's the next day after an experience, to be able to say, you know, what did I need to hear yesterday? I needed to hear that I was still going to wake up this morning, or I needed to hear that I was going to keep food down eventually. Oh. Whatever level of intensity you want around that. But that's the wisdom you're gleaning throughout this whole process. If you can step back and go, yesterday I would have told myself, hey, this is what tomorrow's going to look like. Like, there's wisdom there, which I think also then can look like comfort.
So I would take it back and say the thing that would have helped me is the same thing I said to you.
You are doing it?
Yeah. No.
It won't always be this hard?
No, it won't always be this hard. And you are doing it. And can you just take the next breath? I mean, it really was an incredible experience of focusing on my breath and really knowing that my breath is nourishing me and holding me no matter what.
Yeah. Dean, thoughts on this approach?
Not other than having accompanied Marlis through that period of time, and it was tough. From the standpoint of a support person, there is really nothing that I could do to fix it. I mean, the only way to fix it would have been to get her practice back at that point in time. And so it really is a matter of just journeying with, being present for, you know, in the best way that you can. And we all have different skills around how we do that, but it's kind of a persistent, constant being there and just accompanying, journeying with.
And I suspect you had your own set of grief experiences related to this occurring in your family. And all the things that that meant for your wife and beloved.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and there's my grief for her, my anger over what happened and all of that. So, yeah, the person who is accompanying in a situation like this where the impact is on both of you in a very real way, both of you are going through it at some level.
Well, and I can't help but compare this also to any one who has chronic illness, anybody who's aging, and there is a trajectory here, and it is just progressive, repetitive loss and grief with the loss each time of another ability, another appearance, another, I mean, you know, anyone who's starting to get wrinkles.
As they look at me with my lasered face right now, and I do have a lasered face right now because I'm fighting against it. But I mean, I even think of like my eyesight, you know, I'm 45 and I have had perfection for vision. And now it's very difficult to read without glasses what's in front of me. There's a loss there, which is in part vanity, in part, I'm just not used to wearing glasses. And even in this example, I could turn to myself and go, okay, what would I tell myself yesterday? Don't forget your glasses. It's important. You will get used to wearing them. It's okay to need glasses because it is harder to live life without them than with them.
But it's a reframe.
It's a reframe. And there's like, I can then go, oh, you're learning something along the way, Sarah. You're learning that glasses are okay. Life is easier with them. Try to remember them.
Humility.
Humility.
That's called humility.
Yeah.
That actually you aren't your body. You aren't your thoughts, you aren't your emotions.
No, I have a really
they come and go.
Wonderful dear friend who's very resistant to the glasses, and I can't help but think she's got to need them. She's older than me. She's got to need them, but she's not giving in yet. Okay.
Right. No, everyone has their own journey.
Yeah.
It's really remarkable how what you may think is important and how someone should approach this aspect of life is just freaking irrelevant.
Totally. Like, what if somebody's, say, getting divorced and they're like, but I'm not sad? Do you think there's still an exercise of grief that could occur?
Oh, yeah.
Because I don't think people believe that. I think they're like, no, no, no. I'm sick of the son of a gun. I'm free and clear. I'm not sad at all. And yet, they're.
Yeah. I think often what happens in that situation is that it's very much like the person dying after a long protracted illness And what happens is we grieve along the way in smaller increments. You know, somebody who loved somebody once deeply and then over a period of time falls out of love, or a series of betrayals, large or small, finally resulting in a separation, which didn't occur as some giant explosion suddenly, but instead dribbled off the court, so to speak, that there's been grieving along the way. And a bunch of that got covered up with anger. And I think we don't do ourselves any favors by ignoring the dimension that is grief or sadness at the same time as we also recognize the dimension which is a sense of freedom from something which wasn't any longer serving us.
Is that called non-dualistic?
There's a non-dual aspect to this, like that.
I like it. I like it. Good entry. Way to bring it in, Dean.
Well, and
this is one of our favorite table dinner conversations here, folks. But you're right. Like, we don't have to pick a lane. I can grieve the loss of something that I'm also okay watching let go.
Right.
Or watching go away.
Right.
So I'm going to go for the jugular here.
Who's mine?
Anyone.
Anyone's. Okay. Get ready. Protect your neck.
It is the grief of the loss of an unmet need or the loss of a dream of how it could have been. And, you know, you can take something easy like the person who says they're not sad about losing their marriage. They had a dream, and they ultimately at some point will grieve the loss of that dream. But I'm not done, because you have to grieve who your parents weren't, all the unmet needs, and that they couldn't provide for you because that's who they were and it's the way the system's designed. But if you are able to grieve what your parents couldn't or can't do, it frees you up to be in relationship with them in a way that's no longer victimized and no longer so hurt and so angry, but more in the moment.
Okay. I like everything you said, and I'm worried that we made a leap. So I need to tie this into how one who feels like they've been set free from their marriage might also grieve. Tie that back into the parents.
Oh, it's the loss of a dream. The loss of an unmet need.
There we go.
It's the loss of a...
And I love what you said, Dean, too, because we are practicing the grief along the way, especially in a relationship that's dissolving before your eyes, whether that's marriage or work or whatever. Like, there is this grief that's happening along the way. And I think the more that we can be conscious of that in the moment, obviously, great. Even as we reflect, though, to acknowledge, like, hey, wait, I was sad for 10 years or whatever the thing was that led to whatever this ending looks like, to give credit where credit is due, because there was likely work being done in some capacity along the way.
And sometimes I find myself wondering whether some of the times where we allow stuff to drag on so far beyond the time when we should have said, you know, this is just not okay anymore, is because we're afraid of actually engaging with the grief. It's like, I don't want to let go of that dream. I don't want to let go of the disappointment. And so I'm just not going to feel those things. And I'm going to numb out. And I'm just going to keep on doing what I've always been doing.
Yeah.
And we end up in sort of a stalemate place. And the stalemate is just comfortably numb.
Yeah. Which in some ways, like, I understand people have to do that to survive. You know, not everybody has the luxury of leaving the job that absolutely is torturing their soul, or leaving the relationship that's torturing their soul. And how can we continue to be conscious about that?
Right.
Like, when to say uncle?
Oh, yeah. Because there have been times in every relationship that I have felt tension. And there's a place where I trust the process enough that, you know, I always wonder and or hold faith that this person has showed up in my life at this time for me to learn something. And so I continue to stay in the relationship until somebody's either their behavior has crossed a boundary, and then it's a question of compassion and boundaries, or it's clear that, you know, that was a relationship for that time in my life, and that time has now moved on.
Yeah, and what Dean's saying is don't let the fear of that emotional response stop you from doing what's right for you.
Right. There's a place where all of these things we've been talking about, all of these places of change, transition, of loss, really points to the reality of human existence, which is that it is actually all pretty impermanent, that everything that we love, we will ultimately say goodbye to. Either it or they will leave us or move on, or we ultimately will come to our dying time and need to say goodbye. And so to deny grief and to try to not have any in our lives is to stand against the flow of the entire universe, which is basically, it's all impermanent. And so there is an aspect of being more conscious of even the smaller changes and the smaller times when we have just a tad of sadness because we're letting go of something that was precious to us, but we also knew we were going to need to leave go of some time. That the practice with impermanence over a lifetime, if we're able to be conscious of it, is ultimately going to help us in the time when we're all going to face into our own dying.
Yeah.
That in practicing at dying to who we were, to how we thought it should be, to how it's always been or configured, and moving to whatever the next room is, helps us ultimately to do it at the end of our lives with maybe a bit more grace and a bit more consciousness and a bit more resolution than we might have.
Yeah, well, and the example that keeps coming to my mind as you're talking about this is leaving the family home, right? Like, you raised your kids there, you loved your house, and for some reason, you had to move. Now, do you want to be able to drive by the house and look at it and remember what a wonderful home it was to raise your children? Or do you want to say, I can never go down that street again? Those are two very different long-term experiences for the spirit. And I think it's a metaphor for the whole thing we're talking about. Do you want to be the person that can go back and stand in the yard and say, my God, it was great living here? Or do you want to be forever forbidden from ever driving down the street that meant so much to you?
That's grata grief.
Grata grief.
Mm-hmm. It's gratitude and the grief at the same time. I mean, there's so many things I miss about that house.
Yeah.
And that I loved that house. And I was so sad to go. And I'm so grateful.
Not to live there. Yeah.
Oh, I'm so grateful not to live there.
Both things. I mean, you guys, I was thinking of my own childhood home and what it feels like to drive by there or sit in front of the house whenever I go back to my hometown. But I mean, you guys, your home was, 35 years you lived there in your beautiful home, which I was just telling Marlis I dream about regularly. Because it was also a very warm place for all the people in your life.
Yeah. I want to add a practical solution to times of intense grief and confusion, and just go in nature.
Yeah.
There is such a reflection of the change, the death and rebirth and everything in nature. Every morning I wake up and I look at our monument in our yard that is so elegant and beautiful and a memorial to our adopted son who took his life. And I look at the trees and the birds and the woodpeckers and just the sky. And I mean, it's really that every morning is how I can hold both the grief of life and the beauty and gratitude and that moment. I mean, just take a walk in nature and you will see reflected your own inner experience.
And it doesn't have to be a gorgeous mountain walk in a resort town or community. Yeah. Like wherever you are, there is something green to go look at. Wherever you are, there is something that you can notice about the natural world. And it can be a perspective. And sometimes I'll be honest, like that perspective really frustrates me. Let me guess, I got angry because I was like, oh, all of this is also evidence that the world has continued to march on. I mean, it's the Mary Oliver poem, right? The gnats getting eaten and all the things, it goes on. And also, I think if we can pause or return to it regularly, we can feel a shift that says there's comfort here in knowing that all of this is so impermanent and so we are so small.
Well, and it all belongs.
Yeah.
Right.
And you belong.
Even me?
Yeah.
I don't know.
And all the emotions belong.
I don't know. Hey, have you guys ever driven by your old house and just sat there?
No.
And could you?
Marlis has been back a couple of times.
Several times and met with the woman who bought it and toured what they've done with the house. And
oh, wow. Was it painful?
No, it was kind of exciting to see how they had, you know, a new family has taken that gorgeous respite of a place and created a haven. And they love it. I mean, to have someone else love that house like we did.
Yeah, that's everything.
Oh, my gosh.
When I drive by my family, my childhood home, even the same, it was like a cute little gingerbread house style, cedar shingles, lots of points. And the garage was a separate unit that looked like a little cottage almost. And my mom had these adorable curtains hanging. And I mean, they're still hanging in there. It's the sweetest. So I don't know that my childhood house has changed much, but they must really love it the way it was, which is nice.
It's wonderful.
Can you go back to the old house, Dean?
I have not. And there's a part of me that, you know, it's been 5 years.
That's crazy.
And so there's a part of me that's still actively grieving. And I love to hear when Marlis goes and that they're loving it. And that makes me feel really good. And there's a part of me that hesitates to go look at things that might have changed.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's one that I'm still working with, for sure.
And do I remember right that it was, if we had to say harder for one of you than the other, it was harder for you to leave?
Yeah, that was where Marlis finally said to me, I am moving to the other side of town. Are you coming along?
Okay, so that was a fair assessment.
That was a fair assessment.
And what do you wish you could, if you could whisper in your ear on those harder days of departing that home? What would you tell yourself?
Well, I mean, the process of learning to love the place I currently live in required for me as a guy, and I think women and men grieve a little differently. Women grieve sort of face to face and they talk about it a lot. Men sort of grieve shoulder to shoulder and do things like they'll paint the side of the house or something. So for me, moving into this new house, a part of grieving the loss of the old one was building things here, adding things that were uniquely ours, planting new things to grow, and kind of putting my mark on it. And that took a full 2 years. And it was only after the first 2 years that I began to even think about this new house as, oh, this is the new home. And since that time, I've simply become more and more grateful for this new place. It's smaller, one story, less junk, less maintenance. I mean, there's a billion reasons why this is such a better place. And I actually love it as much as the old place.
So that's what you would tell yourself?
So I would tell myself I'm going to come to a place where I love it. It really goes back to what I said before about I've lost the old place. So what is it that I want? Well, you know, I want that sense of having a piece of land that, or a piece of place that has my mark on it, that has things that I dug up, built, changed, made better, made more welcoming, like people would want to come here and spend time.
Yeah.
I mean, I look back at Marlis's talking about her grief. You know, there are lots of times when we'll say that what, like Marlis said, I love being with people in transition. I'm kind of a transition junkie. And that's what I liked about OB and gynecology most of all. Now, who would have imagined at the outset that the solution to her problem or the solution to her healing would have been finding hospice and being with dying people after spending a lifetime birthing people.
Yeah.
It's like it's not even on the radar screen. It's not even a consideration you would have had at the beginning. And so there's a place to be patient with yourself and your intention. I'm also remembering when I retired, and I mean, I retired partially by my choice, but also hugely because the place I worked decided that the job I had, which I loved, was no longer going to be existing, and they would put me in this other place, which would have been hell for me. And so I was sort of ushered out in a way that didn't require them actually firing me, you know?
Yeah.
And it took me 2 years before the part of me got clear that what I loved the most about being a surgeon, I mean, I enjoyed all aspects of surgery, but the pieces where I felt truly connected were when I was teaching patients, telling them about what was happening, telling them about what we were going to do next, teaching them about their illness, teaching nurses, teaching medical students, teaching people at the hospital, teaching seminars. That was the part that truly fed my soul. But it took me almost 2 years then to move into doing stuff like this.
Right.
And I would never have said at any point in my life before my retirement that this is what I would be doing 15 years after my retirement. It was like not even on the radar screen. And yet it matches perfectly the kind of thread that is woven through many disparate things that I've done that feeds what it is that's important to me.
Well, it's a full circle moment with what you started with, too. It's like, what do I want to continue? Like, as everything goes on the table and we redefine it by taking one thing off at a time, what is still so aligned with my deep values? And how can I recreate it in the way that fits with this life?
Yeah.
Okay, so we're running out of time. I want you guys as listeners to remember that this podcast is for you. It's for the people in your life. It's for the people you know, because we are all experiencing this human condition together. And nobody gets out without feeling loss and grief and change and transition. And there might be a path that makes it a little easier. We hope to have lit that path for you here today. So thinking about how can I capitalize on the wisdom of my experience? If I think about myself as far back as years ago or even just yesterday, what would I say to myself? Because that's what you've learned. How can I redefine this relationship with what is in the most meaningful way? What pieces of the thing I'm missing can I carry with me in a new way, but still familiar? Is that fair?
Yeah.
What's one of the last takeaways, do you think? It's all about love. It's all about patience.
It's all about self-compassion.
Self-compassion.
Being like, kind
give yourself
to yourself.
A break already. Would you just give yourself a break already?
It's entirely.
I mean, not me, but you. Give yourself a break.
No, it's really all about kindness.
To yourself.
Kindness.
All right. Well, thanks for being here today, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. Thank you for joining us on Enduring Grief, Healing Practices and True Stories of Living After Loss. We hope today's conversation brought you comfort, understanding, or simply the assurance that you're not alone in your grief. If you found this episode helpful, please share it with someone who might need to hear it and subscribe as a way to stay connected. We'll be back next week with more personal stories and practical guidance for navigating the complexities of loss. Until then, take care of yourself and remember, there's no right or wrong way to grieve. You have the freedom to mourn in the way that feels true to you.